come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show here on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will discuss one of these two topics. My next guest has made a study of successful people and, in the process, became an expert on the tactics successful people employ. He's discovered some parallels and similarities between Abraham Lincoln and Barack Obama that showcase what high achievers do. We'll discuss his latest book, Lincoln and Obama. Gene Greisman is known around the world for his books, training films, and memorable presentations. As an actor and a playwright, he's performed at Ford's Theater, the Georgia Dome before 25,000 fans, at the Lincoln Memorial, and aboard the famed aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln. Dr. Greisman has written three books, The Achievement Factors, The Tactics of Very Successful People, now in its 31st printing, and The Words Lincoln Lived By, now in its 18th printing. Gene has taught at major universities in the U.S. and abroad, joining us from the greater Atlanta area. Hi, Gene. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good to be with you.
Great. Glad to have you aboard. And you found some very interesting parallels between our 16th and our 44th presidents. That's Abraham Lincoln and Barack Obama. Some of the similarities that you cite are pretty obvious and I guess predictable, both men being from Illinois. But others are fascinating and uncanny and maybe even a little bit mysterious. So let's start with the obvious ones. What similarities do you see between the 16th and the 44th president of the U.S.?
Well, as you've mentioned already, both of them, even though they're not born in Illinois, make Illinois their home. They are both elected to the Illinois legislature. They are both lawyers. They both served briefly in Congress. Neither of them has any executive experience prior to becoming president. They both love poetry. They're both good writers. They're both fine speakers. And then there's, I think, an uncanny parallel, and that is that in the case of Lincoln, Lincoln overtook the front runner who was supposed to be the nominee of his party, William Seward, for the nomination and eventually elected president. And in the case of Obama, he overtook the front runner, Hillary Clinton, who by all odds was supposed to be the nominee. Here's where it gets very interesting. Both of them, Seward and Clinton, are senators from New York, and it gets even more interesting. In the case of Lincoln, Lincoln appoints Seward, who's a senator from New York, as his Secretary of State, and President Obama appoints Hillary Clinton, senator from New York, to be Secretary of State. Incidentally, both of them, even though they start out as rivals in the case of Lincoln and Seward, and in the case of Lincoln and Obama and Hillary Clinton, they are rivals, but they managed to forge a very professional and friendly relationship.
Comment a little bit more on the relationship between President Obama and Hillary Clinton, because depending on which books you read, that can be characterized as a strained relationship or, as you put it, a very professional relationship. How do you think that they deal with each other on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I actually have some fresh and, I think, pretty good information. I went to the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte this past week, and was able to go with the Arkansas delegation when Bill Clinton, the night before his big speech, the big convention, spoke to the Arkansas delegation. And he told the people there, these are his home folk, he said, I have to say that President Obama has treated my wife, Hillary, so very well and so professionally. And he said, that's one reason why I'm happy to support him.
My guest is Gene Greisman, author of the book Lincoln and Obama, and we're looking at the similarities between the two presidents. Gene, you mentioned in the similarities earlier that both are great orators. There's no question about it. Lincoln and Obama are both great orators. But I also found it interesting that both rose to prominence on the back of a major speech that they presented. Talk about that, if you will, please.
That is correct. In the case of Abraham Lincoln, he delivered a speech in what is now known as the Cooper Union Auditorium in New York City. The reason for that was that there were some people who did not think that William Seward would be a strong enough candidate to win, and they wanted an alternative to him, a man by the name of Greeley, who was a journalist and was associated with New York Herald. He wanted to bring Lincoln to a national prominence, so invited him to give a speech. in New York, and that speech the impact was instant and electric. In fact, several New York newspapers printed the whole speech in full the next day. So that began to make Lincoln a national figure instead of just a regional lawyer and politician. In the case of Obama, Obama was chosen to deliver a major speech at the Democratic National Convention, and he was a sensation. So those two speeches brought them into national prominence.
My guest is Gene Griseman. So, Gene, one of the things that I didn't really connect the dots on until I read your book was that both President Lincoln and President Obama faced an economic collapse before they took office. Talk to us about that. Of course, we're familiar with the collapse, the meltdown of 2007-2008. But what did Lincoln face when he was coming into office in terms of an economy?
Well, there was one of the bank runs, actually an economic collapse, and it occurred in 1857. Some historians call it the first economic collapse that had happened in the United States that had international implications. Great Britain was especially hard hit and actually had to bolster its currency to keep the currency alive and afloat. So Lincoln inherited an economic collapse, and of course we all know that so did Obama, the real estate meltdown and the banking collapse just before he took office.
Now, Gene, both Lincoln and Obama were wartime presidents, and as wartime presidents, they had to guide the military. Talk to us a little bit, if you will, about, obviously, the Civil War and the wars that we have in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the different presidents' relationships with their war cabinet.
Actually, this was one of the most fascinating parts of the book. In fact, what I discovered, and incidentally, of the some 18,000 books that have been written about Lincoln, my Lincoln scholar friends tell me that this is probably the only one that has ever been written that looks at Lincoln in tandem with another president. And so I learned some things about both of them that I would not have understood, and that is both of them wrestled with the military. Now, in the case of Lincoln, Lincoln had almost no military experience. He'd served briefly in the Black Hawk War for, I think, a couple of months, maybe 3 months, and of course Obama had none. And what is interesting, and it's a structural arrangement in our Constitution, that a civilian is placed atop the military chain of command, so that very often, and in the case certainly of Obama and the case of Lincoln, you have inexperienced people giving military command to seasoned generals and admirals, often who've seen conflict, and the president has never been under fire. So there's a built-in structural problem here. And in the case of Lincoln and in Obama's case, when you read about them, you find them struggling with the military. In fact, there's a fascinating report that I tell in the book that a New York Times correspondent interviewed Lincoln during the Civil War. He didn't tell this till 10 years later because he was told not to by Lincoln. And Lincoln said to him, he said, "Even though I'm the commander-in-chief, I feel absolutely powerless to get the military to do what I want it to." He said, "Sometimes I feel so distressed, I forget the exact words, the despair fills me right down to the bottom of my feet." And in the case of Lincoln, for example, you read Bob Woodward's book on making the decision about the Afghan War and whether to send a surge to Afghanistan. You find him getting all kinds of differing advice from his civilian advisors, from the various generals, his military chiefs of staff. It's astonishing how similar the parallels are. And you find Lincoln and Obama saying almost the same thing. By the way, I don't know if you noticed it, and I make this point in the book, virtually everything negative that is said about Obama was also said about Lincoln.
It is interesting, and I was going to come to that, but since you've mentioned it, let's delve into that a little bit more, because both presidents were called dictators at some point.
And, that's right.
And
by bumper stickers now, that say Obama's a dictator.
Right, and both were called unpatriotic, divisive, and extreme. Give us your insight, having studied both President Obama and President Lincoln, why such polarization during their times for and against them?
Well, first of all, both presidents serve in a time of crisis. First of all, the economic crisis, and then both of them were war presidents. Certainly, we can't compare the Afghanistan war, the Iraq war, with the Civil War, but they're both wartime presidents, and people are getting killed. I think that one of the reasons that presidents are vilified is that we expect too much of them. For example, we expect a president to be able to do things that only a dictator could do, but if they do it, they're called a dictator. So there's the flaw. For example, as soon as Lincoln went into office, some of the abolitionists were knocking on his door, sending him letters, saying, free the slaves immediately. And Lincoln has to respond, I'm a constitutional ruler, and the Constitution grants to the slave states the right to have slaves. So I do not have the right to overturn the Constitution to free slaves. And so, of course, the people in the North thought that he was too easy on slavery. Similarly, people have expected President Obama to turn the economy around instantly or quicker than he has. I'm reminded of a quote by Abraham Lincoln who said, I freely confess that I have not controlled events. Events have controlled me.
Very profound statement from President Lincoln. Well, I think it's even more fundamental than that, Gene. We're talking to Gene Greissman, the author of Lincoln and Obama. And you mentioned it in that last answer. Both presidents contended with states' rights advocates, and both presidents believed in a very strong central government, and they butted heads with the states' rights people. It came up with Lincoln in slavery. It was very obvious there. In Obama, it's less obvious, but it's this fundamental struggle between can we have national health care, for example, or not have national health care. Is that a state's issue? Education is another area as such. So talk to me about both men, both presidents being strong centralists, central government proponents, and how that impacted their presidencies.
I think that you put your finger on one of the most important contributions of Abraham Lincoln, and it is this. Lincoln transformed the United States from a loose confederation of independent states into a nation. It can really truthfully be said, and I'm surprised more people have not recognized this, that Lincoln turned the United States into a nation. Prior to Abraham Lincoln, people would speak of the United States in the plural. They would say the United States are. After Lincoln, they begin to say the United States is. It's a very conscious decision on the part of Lincoln, by the way. In his first inaugural address, he does not refer to the United States one single time as a nation. He calls it the Union. At Gettysburg in 1863, just 2 years later, he calls the United States a nation 5 times in 2 minutes, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom. So, and it is conscious because Lincoln struggled and actually came up with the idea that a loose confederation was not strong enough to survive. They were against the great centralized powers of Europe, which were waiting for the United States to disintegrate. The British Empire, the French, the Russians, too, were waiting to gobble up parts of the United States when it disintegrated. And so he realized that you needed to have a strong central government in order to survive in the modern world.
My guest is Gene Greissman, author of the book Lincoln and Obama. Gene, I want to talk about the leadership parallels that you see between Presidents Lincoln and Obama, because leadership is your focus, as a matter of fact. And in specific, I want to talk about each president's deal-making ability. Now, Lincoln, you're going to have to refresh our memory on some of the deals that Lincoln had to make with his political constituents to move the country forward. But President Obama has been characterized in a number of books as not being the strongest dealmaker, an ideologue. Ed Klein, in his book, The Amateur, characterizes him as an amateur. Bob Woodward, in his most recent book, asserts in The Price of Politics that the debt ceiling crisis was a failure of negotiation, a failure of deal-making between President Obama and John Boehner. So talk to us about their deal-making skills and any parallels or similarities that you see between Lincoln and Obama.
Well, first of all, each of them had their successes, and each of them had some pretty glaring failures as deal makers, because to make a deal work, you have to have someone who's willing to negotiate in good faith on the other side. So if a deal doesn't succeed, you can't blame just one party. You have to have two parties to make a deal work. I think that in the case of Lincoln, he overestimated, and I discussed this in the book, incidentally, he overestimated the loyalty of the southern slave states to the Union. He thought that they cared more about the Union than they did about their peculiar institution or their economic advantages. And so for too long, he was, some people called him, soft on the states and thought that he could get them back through persuasion. I think in the case of Obama, I think that he overestimated his own ability to persuade on the basis of logic. He is a great logician, and he overestimated the willingness of the other side to do what was best for the country. When the other side was saying all along, we think what's best for the country is to make Obama a one-term president, so we're not going to hand him any successes.
My guest has been Gene Greisman, author of the book Lincoln and Obama, drawing some parallels between the two presidents. Gene, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
I have a website. It is LincolnandObama.com, LincolnandObama.com, and they can get the book on Amazon.
Oh, that is great. Gene, thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
It's been a pleasure to chat with you.